You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Pod save the king!
Hello and welcome to Pod Save the King. I'm your host, Zoe Forsey, and I'm joined, as always, by our royal editor, Russell Myers. How are you, Russell?
I'm very good. I feel a bit strange, and we need to tell the listeners why.
Russell and I have swapped places, so I'm working from home this week, and Russell's in the office, so I'm looking at him through Zoom, sitting in my seat.
It's very odd. I was about to say, shall I do the intro? No, that's Zoe's job, and you will have to do the intro. I mean, I don't know whether we're coming or going, but this is not a good start. So get the wheels back on the road.
It's all thrown, it's all weird, and it shouldn't affect us as much as it has, but it clearly has.
But I like it. I'm just going to say, I'm sitting in the podcaster's hostess with the mostest seat. I've got a lovely view of Canary Wharf, and you're taking a picture of me in the seat. Anyway, there has been a busy week.
Yes, so we finally had the launch of Kate's very exciting new project, which I feel has kind of been like rumbling along in the background and we've had hints of. So this is Shaping Us. So it's a new campaign to highlight the importance of early childhood and how it impacts our whole lives. And the kind of the main center of this is launching with a little video with a girl called Layla. And is she kind of a wax figurine?
I think it's an... Do you remember Morph? You're probably not old
yes.
enough. You do remember. So Morph was sort of like this plasticine, cartoony animation thing. And he went on certain adventures. And this is Layla. Layla is sort of a waxwork, if you will, I think. That's probably a good interpretation. And she sort of journeys through the early years from her mum's, from the mother's pregnancy to becoming a newborn onto nursery. And basically we learn and share in the experiences that she has as a little girl through her early years into her, first 5 years of her life. And that is exactly encompassing what they want this project to be. And I know you said it has felt like a long time coming, hasn't it? Because we had the sort of pre-launch to the launch, then we had the launch, then we had the other launch. Because we had the stuff on the open letter that Kate had written talking about why she wanted to explore the early years. And of course, this isn't a new project. It's just sort of had a bit of a revamp, I suppose. We've got a new Instagram page, we've got a new campaign, we've got new celebrity champions, as they're being called, and a couple of visits. We've had her going to Leeds, we've had her going to a school in East London, and it's all about discussing, I suppose we haven't really got the objectives, which is one of the criticisms that's been labelled so far. It isn't like, right, we're going to reinvent the wheel and these are the 5 points about how we're going to reinvent the wheel. Because I think they need to kind of keep it open-ended. They need to work out where the next 3 to 5 years worth of projects are going to be. And I suppose that's a difficult task because it isn't like... like Earthshot, we are going to have 5 big categories and objectives of trying to save the planet, and these are the ones we're going to do, and these are the campaign is going to be pegged to these objectives and aims, and this is how it's going to roll for the next decade. Well, it's a bit different to that because I suppose it's opening up a conversation, and I was a little bit, where are we? Where are we going with this campaign? And somebody expertly described it to me as though when the royals got involved in mental health, nobody was really talking about it. We're talking about, you know, 10 years ago, when they started talking about mental health, mental fitness, it really wasn't part of the public consciousness. There wasn't a conversation. And I don't really like that term, like striking up a conversation, developing, but it is true, because they need people to start talking about it in order to then work out what is needed and work out what life-changing impacts they can have for different sections of society. And so it is, they have to be baby steps, I suppose, but we see. I mean, it's been described to me as her life's work. I mean, one would imagine these big projects, when you're a royal, have to be your life's work, because you don't end up retiring, do you? You end up doing this job for life, unfortunately, for some of them. But it's very worthy. I think it will make a difference, and it will be something that they hope, and I suppose we all hope, that it can change the next generation of kids' lives for the better.
And so, as we mentioned, she kind of launched this with not just one off event. We've had a whole week's worth of events and things. So she started off by giving a speech at a BAFTA event. We then had kind of a video of her doing pieces to camera. There was a nice promo video with lots of celeb pals in, wasn't there? I spotted Fern Cotton and Professor Green. Who else was in that? Was it Jax Jones?
Jax Jones, Giovanna Fletcher.
Who, of course, you did the podcast with last year.
Absolutely.
So 2 years ago, actually, now. Zara, so old pals.
Zara McDermott. I mean, and the reason why these sort of eclectic bunch of celebs have been chosen is because not only do they have huge following, but they have a kind of role to play with not necessarily the early years, but definitely within the mental health sphere, within societal change. I think, you know, Zara McDermott has spoken about abuse and revenge porn. You have Professor Green, who is very, very eloquent about having children and becoming a father and changing your life, I suppose, when you become a parent, of having a fairly different upbringing himself, brought up by his grandmother, and had issues with his own parents. His father had died early. His mum, I think, had addiction issues. But then you have sort of Fern Cotton, who has spoken very, very eloquently about mental health. So it's bringing people together who are very famous faces, have a big following, and to try and bridge this gap of making this a huge societal issue. Because the reason why Kate has done it is because over the last 10 years she's met an awful lot of people who have been affected by homelessness, mental health, drink and alcohol addictions, and the real common denominator for a lot of people suffering in that way through adolescence and through adulthood is their childhood, and specifically the effect it had on them of growing up in chaotic and often disruptive environments when they were kids. So by addressing this whole notion of the early years are important, it might seem pretty obvious to you or I, who are really fortunate enough to grow up in a very stable environment. But when that is taken away from you, when that sort of foundation of your life is stripped bare, it is... the odds are stacked up against you, aren't you? So she's brought in a load of experts, from people who are psychologists, people who are educational specialists. And through speaking to a lot of teacher friends of mine, they were actually really excited, because it's very difficult to try and bridge the gap between the royals and the... I mean, this is a political story. It is a political issue. We could talk till the cows come home about the fact that we have a Tory government that has stripped away educational standards and finances for schools that are being made to rob, beg and borrow supplies for kids that should be there, and they should have pastoral care, and they should be able to flourish in an environment. I mean, Britain has the most expensive nursery care in the world. And I think, what if we have any listeners from Norway, I think one of the numbers that was quoted to me was it's like £15 a day. So what's that? $18 a day to send your child in Scandinavia to nursery care. So from the age of whatever, 6 months to the age of four before they go to school. In this country, you're looking at between £50 and £90, which is just absolutely extraordinary, that we are expecting these children to be able to, or the families to not necessarily go to work all the time or pay these huge bills, and to have this pressure from the moment a child is born. So there are so many issues that we obviously need to work through. And I think this will, like I said earlier, strike up a conversation. So best of luck to them.
It's really exciting. And she also had a big day out in Leeds, didn't she, to kind of when, you know, as part of the launch week of this. So she took a trip to Kirkgate Market to kind of speak to vendors. She also spoke to university students who's studying childhood studies. She went to a lecture on childhood learning. She's really, what I've kind of taken from this, or kind of from what I've read about Kate in this, is she's not just kind of being given a bit of paper and reading it and going, this sounds good, I'll put my name to it. This feels like something that she's been so interested to learn about. You know, she's constantly brings it up when she's at different engagements. She'll, you know, for other causes, she'll refer back to this work, and you can tell it's something that she's really passionate about, obviously, but also that she's trying to take in as much as she can on this subject.
Yes, and that is true, because some of the experts have definitely said that they were very impressed with her knowledge. I mean, Kate isn't the most vivacious of people. She still struggles with public speaking. I mean, if we're being critical, her speech at BAFTA wasn't the best presentation. It was slightly nervous. There was a crowd of people who are obviously in the room, that some were friends. There was media there. It was a big deal being at the BAFTA HQ. And she still struggles with that. But once you get her in a room full of, whether it's a round table, I think she's definitely improved in the last few years. She's asking more questions, not necessarily just the whole, you know, well, when what do you do, or what do you think? As she's actually being able to evolve her knowledge and present her own findings, I think is really important. And certainly, the aides would say she does. She's very diligent. She does work hard. She's spoken about potentially wanting to go back to university, which I think would help her cause. If that was an open university, sort of stay at home uni course, I think that would be stand her in really good stead. But it's very interesting that she is well-read, and for what she potentially lacks in the whole presentation, when you get her in those situations where she's sitting down with the school children, as we saw with this new video today, which has been launched on the new Instagram page and the Kensington Royal Twitter and Instagram, she's kind of in her element. And I think that will stand her in good stead to try and work out what these kids and the families, especially from deprived areas around the country, what they will need. And then you look at the survey that was done last year. This is an opportunity. I mean, it's buzzword central, isn't it? But it's like to make generational change, to try and open up conversations, and to try and work out how other people surrounding children, whether they're parents, caregivers, grandparents, other members of the family, or people who are teachers or social workers, can actually support each other in nurturing these kids from the age of when they were born to 5 years old, because they are the key moments that they want to address.
And I think so. Obviously, the cute video of her today that you mentioned, I thought was really lovely. And I like looking at those videos. You kind of talk about her public speaking, and I think her talking at that BAFTA event compared to her just camera on her when she was at a school, chatting to kids, saying, you know, oh, I should have bought my teddy bear, I've forgotten it. Like, I think it's a really nice comparison of where she maybe feels more comfortable. But that's, you know, just to sit there with a group of kids, you know, chatting about this stuff. And I think that was really nice to see both sides of that scale.
Yeah.
And one of the other little insights she gave when she was in Leeds, wasn't it, was looking ahead to Valentine's Day next week.
I know, William's been thrown under the bus here, because I think it's, she was visiting a florist. And if I remember correctly, one of the florist said, you know, obviously you'll be getting some nice flowers, some nice roses at Valentine's Day coming up on the 14th. And she pretty much poo-pooed the idea. That she said, I won't be getting any of those. But she said, love goes a long way, which I thought was a rather nice sentiment. Maybe I'll tell my wife that love goes a long way rather than flowers. And I'll see how far that gets me. I might not be here to tell the tale, maybe.
The other boy, did she say no roses? Maybe it's because, you know, she's more of a Sunflowers Girl or something like that, maybe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or, let's give him, I reckon, give him the benefit of the doubt. Romantic. Yeah. I reckon he's a bit of a romantic somewhere. Now, on to the rest of the week, because there's a lot to talk about. We've had lots of engagements, but before we kind of get to the ins and outs of where everyone's been this week, I think we've seen pretty much all the royals this week, actually. But before we move on to that, so kind of big news from Australia, who have announced that King Charles will not appear on their new $5 banknote. So obviously they used to have the portrait of the Queen, but rather than replacing the Queen with kind of, you know, something new for King Charles, they're going to be looking in a different direction.
Well, they have. This has been in consultation over the last few years with the Australian government, or the central bank. It's called the country's Reserve Bank. And they want to pay tribute to the culture and history of the first Australians. And this is what the Reserve Bank said today, that they're in consultation with the first Australians, the native Australians. They wanted to go in a different direction. Now, this is very, very interesting, because obviously there is a backdrop of Republican movements across the Commonwealth realms, such as Jamaica, Antigua, Grenada. They've all sort of made noises saying in the last, especially the last couple of years, but last few months, especially Antigua, were straight out the blocks after the Queen passed away to say, we are going to be making moves to become a republic. Of course, following in the footsteps of Barbados that did become a republic in November 2021. And there is, the conversation is being made in Australia. Certainly, the Prime Minister made, for the first time ever, I think, a minister, albeit a junior minister, for the republic. And so, what does this mean? Does it mean that there is just more of a, gosh, we're using conversation quite a lot, but does it mean there's an opening up of this issue to a wider platform? Will it happen within Australia, Canada? I mean, I think in the Caribbean nations, certainly, there will be definitely countries such as Jamaica and Antigua who want to do it in the next couple of years. So will it be kind of a domino effect? Now, all I can say is that I have had personal conversations with the King. When we were in Barbados, I did have a conversation with him, and he did say, you know, we're not here to, and this was when we were sort of in Barbados, and it was talking about the Republican handover ceremony, if you will. And I mean, he pretty much said that we're not here to be rulers, we're here to be partners. And I think that's really important moving forward, because certainly the King does not want to stand in any of those countries' way if they want to choose their own destiny. And that is going to shape, I imagine, a large part of his reign, because will it be a domino effect? Once one goes, will the others go? And it'll be very interesting to see how quickly it happens, whether Jamaica will be the first. I mean, it has hit a bit of a stumbling block recently. But if the bigger nations, of course, by size, population and our relationship with them, let's say Australia and Canada, do decide to enlarge this issue, I think it will be very, very interesting, because it could create this whole legacy element of his reign.
And so what I also thought was quite interesting was that the Queen's portrait has actually only been on the $5 note since 1992. So relatively speaking, in terms of her reign, it was quite a newer addition to the money. But her, you know, the portrait of her face will still be on coins until the Royal Australian Mint moves that to a portrait of the King later this year. So it's still, you know, the majority of their currency will still have the King's face on it, won't it? It's just the kind of,
yeah. This is just, well, the coins are still going to have his face on it. However, I mean, I think that, so the last Australian Republic referendum was in 1999. And so will they have another referendum? I will say there is a huge support for the monarchy in Australia. I think please, if you are listening in Australia, get in touch, because my understanding, I do a bit of work for Australian networks. I think they still, the royal family is still revered in Australia and New Zealand. There's definitely a love for the monarchy, a love of that tradition. But of course, you know, we are in a different world now. The Queen is no longer with us. It's Charles's reign. Does he represent the same values as the late Queen did for such an incredible legacy that she carved out and left behind? It will be very difficult to have that argument. So I think it's very much a case of watch what happens, because I'm sure the palace would say there's nothing to worry about. It's all business as usual. If those nations do want to choose her own destiny, then we would support them. But behind closed doors, would it bother the king that this is happening under his watch? I imagine it's not something they would lose sleep over, but it's a very interesting historical point, isn't it?
It really is. And yeah, as you said, interesting to see what kind of happens with that in the longer term. Now, back to events this week. So obviously we marked Holocaust Memorial Day start of this week. And the King and Queen lit candles at Buckingham Palace to remember those who suffered during the Holocaust. Now, obviously, it was last year, wasn't it, that Charles commissioned that amazing set of portraits to kind of, you know, make sure that we are remembering these people and what they went through. But this, and so this year they met with a couple of survivors, didn't they, to kind of, you know, hear their stories.
Well, they did. And first of all, they met Dr. Martin Stern, who was taken to a concentration camp during the Second World War as a young boy. And he has spoken very eloquently in the past about the Holocaust and, of course, what the Holocaust Memorial Day means to survivors, but also what it means to the next generation. And I think that certainly the King's words struck me this time. I'm just reading them now. He said, I hope this will be one way of trying to remember all those people who had to suffer such horrors for so many years and still. But also, Charles and Camilla met with a woman called Amuna Adam, who was a survivor of the genocide in Darfur in Western Sudan, because they wanted to not only make this about the survivors from the Nazi concentration camps, but also the wider genocides. And I think that that's really important, that Charles has certainly used this as an opportunity to remember all victims of genocide. And I think that when we've heard him speak in the past, it's certainly very much at the forefront of his mind in trying to represent many faiths and communities. I think we saw that for the first time when he spoke to the nation, indeed the world, in his maiden speech. Again, we come back to these real core elements of unity, togetherness, being a representative of all faiths. And that's quite an interesting point. Will we see that within his coronation as well? Because there's an awful lot of talk about whether he would say defender of the faith, defender of all faith. I think he'll stick to the script in terms of defender of the faith, but there will definitely be a big representation of many faiths who are represented throughout our society. But also, I will mention Auschwitz survivor Lily Ebert, who was awarded the MBE by King Charles himself this week. And that was for services to the Holocaust Education Trust. And she has, again, spoke very, very eloquently. If you haven't seen her speaking after she received the MBE, it is mind-blowing, because she essentially says she had sworn to herself at the time that if she was to survive this horror from the Nazis, that she would dedicate her life to remembering the victims and also working with other survivors. And of course, in her later years now, that is something that is remarkable and certainly no less deserved than for all her for her work there.
And as you said, I think one of the things that I know that Charles last year, when he commissioned these portraits that I mentioned at the start, was kind of working on the logic of, it's very sad to say, but as time moves on, the survivors who can tell these accounts, you know, in the future will not be with us and will not be able to remind us all about it. So it's kind of making sure that we are still reading these stories and making sure that nobody ever forgets what happened. If you haven't already, the stories of both of these survivors that the King and Queen met on Holocaust Memorial Days are on the Royal Family's Instagram pages. And I would very much recommend that you go and read about them, because they are went through horrifying things and have both done amazing things since. Elsewhere this week, the King and the Queen hosted a palace reception, and you get to use your kind of, collaborative working klaxon here, don't you? You've got the full gang.
Full Monty, yeah. So who do we have? King, Queen, Anne, Edward was there, Duke of Kent, Duchess of Gloucester, Princess Alexandra. We had everybody. And this was at a reception to celebrate East and Southeast Asian communities. And I wasn't there, but I heard it was a bit of a do. Everyone was having a jolly good time, and everybody was on top form. All the senior roles at Buckingham Palace to pretty much to celebrate the Lunar New Year, talking to TV presenter and model Alexa Chung, who people will definitely know not only in the UK, I imagine across the world, because she's a pretty big star, as Alexa Chung. And speaking to fashion designer John Rocker, CBE. And I think from what I gathered, again, this is something which has been in the diary for quite a while, to bring different communities together and to celebrate their own individuality. I mean, we've had it recently with the Queen welcoming different communities over the last few months to Buckingham Palace. And that is definitely something that's going to be happening right up towards the coronation and beyond.
Now, Sophie was missing at that event. I thought she would be there because, you know, obviously Prince Edward was there, but she didn't attend that one. But she did have a really fun day out on the farm, didn't she, as part of the Addington Fund, which she is patron of. And that I hadn't actually heard of this charity kind of before Sophie's work, but they support farmers and their families during times of crisis. So she visited a small dairy farm in Gloucestershire to kind of hear about the challenges they're facing. One of these moments where I think Sophie just looks so at ease. You know, she's got her wellies on, she's got a big kind of barber style jacket on, and she was feeding some calves, wasn't
feeding,
she?
Kind feeding of
getting,
calves.
Getting right in there.
Getting her hands dirty. I mean, a more serious point of definitely tackling the issues that farmers have to make. I mean, have you been into a supermarket recently and tried to buy eggs? You cannot buy eggs in this country at the moment. I mean, talk about broken Britain. No, nobody can get eggs. And the reason is because the supermarkets farmers would tell you, are basically putting farmers to the wall and charging them more and not giving them enough money. And so there are real issues in this country, I imagine, throughout Europe and the States, because agriculture and dairy farmers are finding it very, very hard to exist. So really good that Sophie is kind of shine a light on what it means to be a farmer, because I think when you live in a city, it can be very, very difficult to understand the rural way of life. And that is definitely what the Addington Fund, this farming charity, do, talking about farmers, what they're having to go through, talking about affordable housing for them, disaster relief as well. In times of crisis, we've had some real major, major floods over across the UK at the moment. But yeah, good on Sophie.
It was a really nice event, actually, and it felt a bit different, which was nice to hear this week. Camilla has been at an event today as well, hasn't she? She visited the Book Aid International's headquarters and helped complete a shipment destined for a public library in Rwanda. Now, this is actually a library that she visited when she was in, when they were there last June. They were there, I think, for the opening of a Commonwealth Leaders Summit. So she popped into the library. So it was nice kind of seeing her revisit something to do with that project.
I was there. I was there in Kigali. Yeah. And so, and then we went on to do something about literacy at the end of last year with the Queen Consort. So basically speaking about the life-changing effects reading can have. And we've seen her speak at the Booker Prize before. We've seen her speaking about literacy. And you talk about early years development. This is something that's really, really key to children's well-being, I believe, because if you can get them interested in reading, then it helps their imagination and their overall well-being and development and how they can think about problem solving and whatnot. And if you get Camilla on the subject of books and libraries, it's something that she is tremendously, tremendously passionate about. And one of the charities that she's been working with is Book Aid International, which sends more than a million novels, non-fiction books, medical textbooks, and basically academic books to all over the world. And if you haven't heard of them, they basically provide this little these little boxes, which are called Discovery Book Box, and they're basically a mini library in a box, and they can send different titles to different displaced people in countries all around the world. So if you haven't heard of them and want to get involved or donate, Book Aid International. And I think I'll just look this up. Yeah, she, you know, that was it. She took over as being the patron from the Duke of Edinburgh himself. So a very worthy charity that has had long established links with the royal family, and no doubt it will continue with Camilla at the helm.
And just I'm going to read out the quote that she gave when she was speaking there today. She said, I know the people and children who have seen these books, and it's life-changing to be able to pick up a book and to be able to read it. A lot of them are in terrible situations. It is a form of escapism. It takes them to another world. So it's you who are doing it. So thank you very much. So I just love that idea of kind of talking about, you know, it's, you know, people that are going through all sorts of dreadful
especially
things,
kids,
but to be able
right?
to, yeah, exactly, definitely. To have kind of half an hour that you can pick up a book and just escape into that world, whatever it is incredible. And, yeah. and like one of those really simple ideas that I think is extremely powerful and can hopefully do a lot of good. Elsewhere, Camilla had another outing this week, didn't she? So kind of a first since she got a very exciting title.
Well, she was visiting the Grenadier Guards for the first time since being appointed the battalion's colonel. This came across in, you know, it seems like only yesterday, but it was in last December. She basically became the colonel of the battalion, and she got to go and visit them. She was presenting some medals. I saw it was about 10 soldiers that she had gone to visit. They were basically handpicked for their exceptional service whilst deployed in Iraq last year. She got to meet a couple of soldiers who were honoured for their length of service as well. And this was at Lily Barracks in Aldershot in Hampshire. And I think we've seen a lot of Camilla at the moment, and it tells you a lot about her sort of breadth of the job that she has at the moment. So domestic violence campaigning, literacy, talking about books for children. I definitely has an early years development sort of notion about that kind of her work as well, but also as a patron of the armed forces as well, is something that really cements her role within the royal family, I think, because that is obviously something that the royal family have had in spades in the last couple of centuries, I suppose.
And a lovely moment from this that I really enjoyed, obviously, when she was there and they recreated a photo that the late Prince Philip had when he was in the position. So they all created it on the steps of the officers' mess, and she joked, she was chatting to Second Lieutenant Archie Denison Smith, and she kind of asked, why are the junior people, you know, on the floor? And they just said, we're recreating the photo, that's why we're doing it, we've not just put them on there, we want it to be exactly as it was, which I thought was
I did think it was a little bit odd, but thank you for the explanation, because yeah, I did wonder.
That nod to tradition again, and the fact that she kind of did two things from Philip this week, actually, I didn't really realise until they were next to each other on our plan here. But that's really nice, actually, isn't it? And making sure, obviously, there's lots of talk of keeping the Queen's legacy alive, but it's really nice to see that Philip's work is being continued as well, and very literally in part, you know, in the point of making junior people sit on the floor for the sake of that. So yeah, no, it's good fun. Now, do we have anything interesting coming up next week? Or
well, there's something I was just looking at is Charles and Camilla are going to be going to Brick Lane, and if you're not aware of Brick Lane, it is not only the heart of the British Bangladeshi community, but it is probably the I'm going to say something a bit controversial. It's probably one of the best places you can get a curry in the UK, because obviously we have
definitely in London.
Shout out to Birmingham, shout out to Manchester, awful lot of other places certainly in the north as well, but they are going to be doing that on Wednesday, again talking about meeting charities, businesses, bringing them all together. I suppose talking also, one of the messages is not only about celebrating those communities, but definitely meeting people who are involved in anti-racism movements of the 60s and 70s and still doing that today. So, I think much more of these smaller community events leading up to the coronation, bringing people together from all walks of life as well. And something I think we may see over the next few weeks is sort of drip feeding of information about the coronation, because I thought it was quite interesting during the week that we saw one of the points which has been made of whether we will see the anointing of the king. I mean, it's something that we didn't see. The cameras cut away for it for the queen's coronation. It's considered so sacred that she's essentially being anointed by God. She is the, I suppose, the human representative of God on earth. And that's, it was considered so sacred that the public should not see it. However, discussions about whether there will be a canopy, whether the cameras will cut away, whether there will be a transparent canopy, no canopy at all. I mean, literally, the list is endless, but I think it's rather fascinating about what will happen, how much will we be able to see, because I suppose the king does want to make it as accessible as possible. So, yeah, maybe give us a shout. What do you want to see in the coronation? Didn't somebody I love that video of the school children, and somebody said, what do you want to see the king do? And somebody said, do a cartwheel.
And maybe
we'll see him do a cartwheel. You never know.
Excellent. I will second that request. I'm big, big fan of that. Lovely. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Russell. Thank you for everyone who has tuned in this week. As always, we are on social at PodSave on Twitter and on Instagram. And until next time.
PodSave the King.